Hello, I'm Craig Barton, and welcome to this Tips for Teachers Top 5 all about effective mini whiteboard use. Now, just as a reminder, this is available both as an audio podcast and also as a video. And if you want to access either medium, just have a look either in the podcast show notes or in the video description or on Tips for Teachers, and you'll find links to both. So you can share it with your colleagues however you choose. Right, mini whiteboards, a controversial topic for some teachers. They're regular users, and a lot of the things I say may be deemed as obvious. For other teachers, you may be mini whiteboard skeptics or perhaps mini whiteboard dabblers, and maybe there'll be something useful for you in here. Let's see. Now, I should say that in my book, Tips for Teachers, available in all good and evil bookstores, I share 22 ideas to improve the use of mini whiteboards. In this video and podcast, I've chosen my favourite 5 of those, so hopefully they'll be useful to you. So, tip number 1, fairly standard when I'm lucky enough to visit classrooms, is to see either A4 mini whiteboards or even A5 mini whiteboards. I'll tell you what, if you've never tried an A3 one, your life will never be the same again. They're flipping brilliant. Two reasons why A3 whiteboards are good. Students can either write more on them, and hence they become much more versatile. They're more suited in maths for solving more complex problems, or in subjects where students write a lot more, students can obviously fit more on the board. Or students can write bigger on them, which makes your job, when you use them for checking for a whole class understanding, much easier. So if you've never tried A3 before, and perhaps you're about to order some new ones, or you can convince the person who holds all the cash, just try getting a set of A3. You will never look back, I promise you. Tip number 2, this is one of my favorites, make use of both sides of the mini whiteboard. Most mini whiteboards that you've got have blank on both sides, or maybe a little bit of writing on one of the sides. Use both of them. What often happens is that students do all their writing and working out on one side of the mini whiteboard. So here's an example here. Imagine I've asked students to expand those double brackets. They've done their working out. They've also put their answer. Now, when they hold that up, and imagine there's 30 kids holding it up, it's very difficult for me as the teacher to pick out that answer amidst all the working out. Whereas if instead, if I say to students, do your working out on one side, then write your final answer nice and big on the other side, students can then hold up the side with the final answer on. My check for understanding is they're much more simple for me. And then if I then choose to ask a student to articulate why they think the answer is this, they can then use the other side to talk me through their working. So working out or notes on one side, the final answer on the other side that they hold up makes a big, big difference. Tip number 3, I really like this one as well, control the flow of information. If you've got 25 or 30 students in your class and you say 3, 2, 1, hold up your board, show me the answers. Visually, it's very overwhelming to take in all that information, particularly in the kind of 5 seconds we normally allow ourselves to do it. But if you control the flow of information, it's much more simple as a teacher to take in what the students are showing you and pick out useful things. So if you've got your desks arranged in rows, I say to my students, okay, back row, hover your boards, 3, 2, 1, show me your answers. I can then spend a few seconds scanning the back row. I then say, okay, boards down, middle row, hover your boards, 3, 2, 1, show me your answers. So I control the flow of information. Of course, the same thing's gonna work however your room's set out. If it's a horseshoe, start on the left, then the center, then the right, and so on and so forth. But controlling the flow of information, asking one portion of your class to show you, then put their boards down, then the next portion, I just find I can pick out much more interesting answers and get a much better feel of my class's understanding that way. Tip number 4, the notorious blank board. If you say 3, 2, 1, show me your answers, and a student holds up a blank board, it tells you nothing. Is that due to a lack of understanding, or is it due to a lack of effort? You need to know. So whenever you then do your subsequent questioning, question the students who hold up the blank boards first and find out why. Tom, why haven't you put anything on your board? If Tom says he doesn't know, well, then you can use all extra strategies, and we'll talk about these in a subsequent video. You can say to Tom, well, what do you know? Or you can go around the class and say, okay, Michael, what do you think? Emma, what do you think? And so on. Now back to you, Tom, which of those answers do you think is the correct and most useful one, and so on. But the bottom line is you want it to be effortful. You want the students to notice that if they've put a blank board, that's not the end of the story. you're going to come to them and so on. And if they realize that actually it's a lot more hassle to put up a blank board and then be faced with a barrage of questioning, you're going to filter out straight away whether it is due to a lack of effort or a lack of understanding. And if in fact it is due to a lack of understanding, you can then help that student out. So question students who hold up the blank board first. And kind of follow-up ideas to this as well. You can say to students, look, if you don't know, don't just put a blank board. Either write me down, why don't you know it? What's confusing you? Or perhaps write me a question that you'd like to ask me, or write me something that you do know on there. You just want the students to get some information down, because a blank board tells you nothing. And the more you start questioning students who have blank boards, and the more you start supporting them with things that they should put down instead if they're stuck, the more useful information you're going to get. Final one. Oh, I think this is my favorite now, if I had to pick one. Use mini whiteboards to help check book work. Now, certainly maths, as a maths teacher, the majority of the work my students do is in their books. The problem with that is it makes it quite difficult to do a whole class check for understanding, because students' work is tied to their books, and the students can't hold up their books, their writing's too small, and so on and so forth. So what I do instead is I use the mini whiteboard to help support this. So I'll give you an example. So this is a classic kind of do now that you might do in maths. Last topic, last term, last year. Imagine students are working their way through this, they're doing it in their books at the start of the lesson, and then you want to get a sense of whole class understanding for that. A second question, a regular polygon has 12 sides, what's the size of one of the exterior angles? Now what typically happens, certainly in my classroom for many years, is I'd say, Erica, what did you get for that question? Tom, what did you get for that question? The problem with that is I'm only sampling one or two students. I want to get whole class understanding, but the work's tied in their books. So what I do instead is they do the do now in their book, and then at the end, I say, right, I'm going to go through the answers now. Can you all write down nice and big, not the working, just the answer, nice and big, can you write the answer to that second question? All the students do it, 3, 2, 1, show me, and then I can get a sense of whole class understanding as opposed to sampling just one or two students. Then I can say, clean your board. Okay, now let's do question 3. I only ever do one check for understanding per board session, just so it's nice and clear and I can take in that information. This works as well, I should say, when students are practicing. So imagine students have been working through an exercise, 10 questions, 12 questions, something like that, and you want to do whole class understanding. Just pick out a pivotal question, let's say it's question 5, and say to the class, right, I'm about to go through the answers. I want you all on your boards, just write me down your final answer to question 5. Hover it, 3, 2, 1, show me, and then you can make that decision faced with some reliable evidence, whether you need to go through that question or whether we can just move on to something more complex and so on. But getting book work onto the board in terms of the final answer, I think just works so, so well. So there's 5 tips for improving mini whiteboard use. The usual thing I ask teachers to do here is to think which of those you already do and you don't need to worry about doing anymore. But are there any of those that you either don't do or you think you could do a bit better that you find interesting? When can you build those into your practice? And if you found that useful, just a reminder, there's 22 tips. We're just scratching the surface here of mini whiteboard use, all available in my Tips for Teachers book. And also, if you head to tipsforteachers.co.uk, you might find 4 other things that you'll find useful. There's my Tips for Teachers podcast, where I interview guests from the wonderful world of education who share tips with me. I also capture each of those interviews as videos that you can use to share with colleagues, get loads of ideas there. There's also the Tips for Teachers newsletter. I email you a tip for you to try out in your classroom every Monday morning. And finally, there's all my Tips for Teachers online courses and face-to-face courses, just in case you need a bit more support. Thanks so much for watching. Hope you found that useful.